You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Picture, if you will, a man running a website all by himself. That website, OneOfUs.net. But there are many challenges down the road, ones even he cannot possibly imagine. Dark challenges. Like, how do you get the money to keep a site like that going? Well, you do it by getting subscribers. Mysterious, anonymous subscribers out in the ether who come in and give subscriptions in order to keep the site running. Sure, they get free bonus content and a lot of it, but who are they really? People who are OneOfUs.net. People who are one of us. Or is it Oscar Blues Brewing Company? The beer brewery that made the first craft beer in the can. How did they even come up with that idea? Did it come from aliens? From something that's before time and man tread on this planet? No one can ever know, but the truth is, there's genius there, as their beers are delicious, and they have brew pubs located in North Carolina, two in Colorado, and one in Austin. Oscar Blues, a sponsor for OneOfUs.net. Between Oscar Blues and you, the potential subscriber, is the only hope this man and this website has. There's a signpost up ahead, and it reads, OneOfUs.net needs you. Disney's Christopher Robin, the story of a man who thought he had it all until his world started to crumble around him. Was he losing his mind, or was an evil born of the realm of chaos coming to tear his life apart and everything he knew? It is Disney's Christopher Robin. I mean, really, this is like, I kept thinking when watching this, you remember when there was a big thing to make trailers for movies recut so they were a totally different genre of film?
Yeah, when did that die
like
out?
Shining, when it was like the family comedy version of The Shining. It's like you could totally make a horror movie trailer out of this so easily.
I missed the horror Mary Poppins one. I love that one.
Oh, that's great.
See that?
My favorite is 10 Things I Hate About the Commandments, which was like doing a high school party movie out of the Ten Commandments.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so brilliant.
Jeez.
But anyway, I'm Chris, and joining me, of course, is Frank.
Hello.
And then our special guest and foreign correspondent, international correspondent, Shaq.
Listen, a man about town coming from the straight out of the streets of Toronto, Canada.
You might have heard him before on The Breakfast Pub.
Yes,
or,
a couple times. And I co-host Eye on the Prize, the award show podcast.
And as well, you've been appearing on the Screener Squad lately.
Yes. Justin's been sending me the worst shit.
Yeah, I actually keep bringing up the fact how happy I am I did not have to watch the Jurassic Dead. So
that made me like furious on a whole other level. I cannot. Let's not talk about that,
okay,
please.
Let's talk about this movie.
It's a happy place right now.
Please and thank you.
This is directed by Mark Forster, who has known for, well, I would just flat out say movies like this in the sense that he did Finding Neverland,
which was about
the creator of Peter Pan. This one being about the
Winnie the Pooh.
The central character.
But the central character of him in a magical realism sort of way. He also did the wonderful Monsters Ball, the best Will Ferrell movie ever, Stranger Than Fiction.
And World War Z.
I love it's a Mark Forster film because his like resume is like just off the wall.
It's
random.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Although he did my least favorite of the new James Bond movies, Quantum of Solace.
Really?
Yeah.
I was kind on that movie.
It's not good. It's not great.
But we see here first the young Christopher Robin, who is, growing up playing with the CG animated, but like done to be very convincingly beat up stuffed animal look.
They're pretty well done.
I thought they did a great job with the CG.
Oh, yeah. He looks great. Especially like even like the animal creatures. So like owl and rabbit, I thought they did pretty well with those.
It's almost that owl and rabbit were so realistic looking, and the rest of them, they look like a real owl and rabbit.
Yeah.
And all the rest of them look like beat up
really
old stuffed
animals. Yeah. It's kind of like, why did y'all choose to go that route? But I don't know. Anyway, it works. And we see him having to say goodbye to his friends because his family, after many adventures, his family shipping him off to private school. And he's like, don't worry, I'll never forget you. Flash 2 years later when he's forgotten them.
And with the most depressing lifetime I've ever seen. You're just like, how terrible that school was when he went to war.
Yeah, he went to...
I'm not even done with the credits yet.
Yeah. You know, on the upside, he married and got to have sex with Hayley Atwell. So, you know, it's not a complete...
Plus and minus.
But it was chivalrous.
He's now, you know, he's supporting her and his daughter by working a job at a luggage factory that... Even though he's a mid-level manager, he's clearly not crazy about it. He's got his boss who's like, you know, a silver spoon, like English snob. Somebody who would have worked in the bank in Mary Poppins.
Every character in this company, every actor, had like the most over-the-top British mannerisms I've ever seen in my life.
Once again, I kept expecting to see Dick Van Dyke sweeping, you know.
You will see in this Christmas, though, Mary Poppins Returns.
That's true.
He is in it.
Not playing the same role, though.
He's playing, I think, because he also played the bank manager.
He's the son of the bank manager. Anyway, sorry. So everything's ever great. He wants to spend more time with his family. We're like, we never see you. He's about to send his daughter off to private school. She clearly doesn't want to go. She just wants to be a kid. But she also wants to please her father. And just when they planned a weekend away at his home cottage, which you're like, you own this beautiful house in the country and you got to work the shitty job.
Yeah.
I thought, because that's his like family cottage. I thought he was just left him.
It's the family man.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if you don't want it, then sell it so you could like take a break and look for a better job. But anyway, I digress. So he's told, I'm sorry, I can't go. They're making me stay for the weekend because now I'm going to have to figure out a way to cut an enormous amount of overhead from the company. He's not a happy guy, but all this is set in motion when he accidentally breaks a jar of honey and off in the 100-acre woods, far away in what is sort of fantasy land, Pooh wakes up from a long slumber and smelling honey and discovers he can't find any of his friends. So he goes into the door that Christopher Robin once used to come out of and ends up in his backyard. And Christopher Robin is absolutely shocked to find out that his childhood memories of like his imaginary friends were not even vaguely imaginary.
Yeah.
Are real little Cohen spouting and he's like, no, you have to come back and sense help me find my friends while he's destroying his house basically. And, you know, this is really kind of the dividing line between a very long lead up in the first part of this film.
Because
it takes a while to get there where I was kind of like, okay, it's moving at its own pace to him having to going back reluctantly to the 100-acre woods and rediscovering basically the child inside of him and all that. And then realizing I got to reconnect with my family, yada, yada. All leading up to Disney lecturing us of all things about how you should treat your workers better. Which is the most ironic message that they could have. Yeah, let's ask your employees at your theme parks how they feel about this movie.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, no, I got nothing for that because that's just so on the nose.
Yeah. One thing, though, that made me laugh, though, is when he does go back into the 100-acre wood, there's a point where he does lose Pooh and he's just kind of like wandering the forest by itself. And with the fog and everything, it kind of reminded me of Evil Dead a little bit.
I kept expecting horror shit to happen in this movie.
There's a point where he's just like running through and the camera work is almost like eerily similar to like when the demons are just like speeding through the woods. I was like, did this just turn into like an R-rated horror movie right now?
Yeah, that Raimi look of the
But the most like threatening monster here is going to be an elephant. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, the heffalump.
It's
an elephant. It's I don't know what to tell you. Maybe it's an oilephant. I don't know.
An elephant, yeah.
Didn't have enough time.
Their scariest enemy is just poor grammar.
Yeah, right? and naivete in the face of reality. You know, there's a lot of sort of what was it you referred to the thing that pisses Martin off here?
Oh, the Disney dad thing.
The Disney dad syndrome of like, oh, don't you understand? It's easy. Just stop doing your job so you can give more love and spend time with your family.
Yeah.
Sure, no, there's nothing sacred noble about what that guy's doing.
Not like you're trying to provide.
I thought that his like, oh, I know the way to trim fat. I'll just quit my job. You can just use my salary to save everybody.
I mean, once again, once you realize he owns the house of the country, you're kind of like, okay. Yeah. Well, you probably could have done that, actually.
And he owns a brownstone in fucking London, central London.
He's not doing that bad.
I know.
He's a middle manager at a huge company. You're like, okay.
I do love that they
privilege.
I do love that they made him like this manager of a luggage company, for literally a company that inspires you to go and travel and see the world, and he's like stuck behind his desk. Can't even go away for the weekend. It's just so funny.
You can't even go to Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly.
But then when he says like the solution to like the problems at the end, it's like, wait, what? How have you not thought of this in the first 20 minutes?
That's like, oh, here we go.
I mean, there's certainly, you know, once you get past that, which I wouldn't have even thought about that stuff if it wasn't for I knew Martin was sitting next to us.
Yeah.
I know that drives him up the wall.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, God damn it, Martin being in the room is ruining this movie. But I mean, like, the biggest problem with this film is just that it just takes so long to really find its feet and be clear what it even is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like I said, they're moralizing at the end is so last minute. Like, well, yeah, we got to have a message. Jim Cummings voices Winnie the Pooh and Tigger, which he nails it so hard, it's ridiculous.
Oh, he's
so dead on.
I just remember just growing up with like the old animated series, and his voice is basically just like that warm blanket, like an audio version of a warm blanket. I'm just like, I feel safe and at peace right now. He was nailing it.
Brad Garrett is Eeyore is definitely terrific. I mean, you can tell it's unlike, I will say Jim Cummings sounds so much like the original Winnie the Pooh and Tigger that I would be hard pressed to tell the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can tell with Brad Garrett's Eeyore, but he does such a great job. And Eeyore gets all the best lines in this.
He really does. Like, he just cracks me up. Like, his sarcasm or his, like, wit is just, like, on point, I think.
Just like that most nihilistic friend that you've ever had.
I know.
Toby Jones plays Owl. Nick Muhammad is Piglet. Peter Capaldi, yes, the last Doctor Who, is Rabbit. Sophie Okonedo. Yoda is Kanga, the kangaroo, and Cher Sheen is Roo, the little baby kangaroo, which, you know, I was kind of like, boy, everybody, like the rabbit, the kangaroos, and the owl kind of got like the cameo treatment in this.
Yeah, they did.
They really just didn't get to do a whole lot here.
I guess I can see like the burden of like the writers having to throw lines at everybody when they're in a trunk back of a truck and like this and that.
When they make Christopher Robin 2, they should make it a heist movie where they all have their specials.
Yo. Oh my god.
They get like Suicide Squad style openings.
Type of movie.
Yes.
These guys.
We're going to take down Winslow's the luggage.
Exactly.
Look at the world's most expensive piece of luggage is being displayed, and this is our plan to get back at them.
No, it's not going to be Ocean's 11 or like James Bond. It's going to be XXX, like the third one that just came out.
You see Pooh riding a fucking dirt bike on an impossibly big jump.
We got DJ Eeyore.
You know he would be the DJ.
Oh, yeah, and he would just play nothing but Morrissey.
Oh, God. And Joy Division, Sisters of Mercy.
I think Eeyore would mind the bar.
Actually, no, that'd be a much better idea.
Once this movie finally got its feet, and when his family starts to realize, wait, he's not going crazy, these things are actually real, which I would expect a little bit more of a complete and utter shock period, but hey, it's a Disney movie, is when the movie actually starts to be like, okay, now I'm with you 100% movie. I'm actually really enjoying this. At least for me.
No, I think so too. You know, it's funny because I could not. I told myself I'm not going to do this. I was not going to think about Hook in this movie, but I couldn't help myself. And I think things I loved about Hook was the middle and the end and the interlude sequence. The stuff in Neverland is just like cheesy as fuck.
Yeah,
but it's the complete opposite here. I think that the scenes in the real world are so Disney-fied and just so like. You know, oh, geez, and we got this problem, and oh, there they go. You know, but then in The Hungry Dicker, it's like peaceful, and it's so like serene, and just, you know, it's almost ethereal, and it's just like so calming. I was like, oh, why can't they just film a whole movie here?
Stressed out every time it went back to London.
I lived in London, so I mean, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is I was afraid that it was just going to be mostly like, something like similar to like the Smurfs, where it's just like, hey, it's the Pooh characters causing hijinks in London, but like there was a little bit of that, but it was mostly like the parts in the 100 Acre Wood. I love those.
Yeah,
it was really charming.
It's gonna be like Larry David is the Heffalump or some shit like that.
Yeah,
like, oh, come on, don't do that.
It'd be like that terrible like early 2000s soundtrack.
Oh God, it would end with a big like hip hop musical number.
But it'd be like one of the safe ones. So it'd be like. Fucking like Flo Rida or some shit.
You know, I think this is, I said to you, Frank, I feel like they want, as you often do with these type of films, they want to make a film that relates to the nostalgia of the parents and has something also purely the kids can enjoy. And I'm not sure they found that perfect mix. It's an uneven movie, to be sure. Yeah. I think kids will ultimately enjoy it more than parents will.
Yeah.
But even then, there's long stretches here. I could tell just by the kids in the audience that they were getting pretty bored.
Yeah, there was not as much reaction to... to, you know, by the audience in general. The nostalgia factor is going to be what drives this, you know, home. Because every time, like, when before Tigger sang a song and, you know, just the identifiable, you know, like, you know, just signs, everyone was, like, getting really excited because they could sense it coming. But there is stuff here for everybody, but it is, it does take a while to get there, and it is sort of bumpy getting there. But I don't know. It's got some charm. I love that homespun philosophy. I'm a sucker for homespun philosophy. I mean,
whoever, the guys who wrote this definitely spent more time reading the Tao of Pooh than they did the original.
And Piglet, too. And I didn't even know those things existed until a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it is for everybody, but it's just spurts of stuff for everybody, really.
You're making it sound dirty.
I'm not.
It's little spurts.
Spurts of honey.
Spurts of honey, there you go.
Didn't help that, like, it sounded kind of gross every time Pooh was eating honey.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it was like...
You can't stick your face in a jar of honey and it's not going to sound like, you know, like Foley for a point.
Just, well, when he rubbed it on Christopher Robbins' face, it was just like...
Yeah, you're like,
just,
no!
Okay. Got, there's the money shot.
Yeah, like, okay.
Y'all are ruining the sanctity of Winnie the Pooh, please.
Everything says sticky in here.
No! No!
All right, let's go to final thoughts. Frank, why don't you get us started?
You know, I guess I enjoyed this movie.
You guess?
I guess so. It took a while before I finally decided if I enjoyed it or not. It was, you know, it was charming. It was sort of funny. I think I'll like it more if I see this again down the line. But I love seeing, you know, because Ewan McGregor and... Mark Forster made another film together, really, really, I think, a really good film called Stay with Naomi Watts and Ryan Gosling.
Oh, right, that super weird one.
Yeah,
I love that movie, and everyone else hates it. I'm surprised to find someone else who likes that movie.
And that's what I like about that, their collaboration in that movie, and same thing in this, is that Forster is able to, like, let Ewan McGregor explore his vulnerability in ways that I don't think, like, he's gotten that much chance to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and from other directors. So I recognize that in this movie, and for that alone, I liked it. I liked Ewan McGregor a lot in this movie. I liked everybody in this movie. I love the nostalgia factor. I think the nostalgia alone makes it worth recommending. The jokes, some of them don't always hit home. In fact, most of the funny parts, you know, just come from Eeyore because he is so sarcastic, and maybe he's like, maybe we do find sarcasm and cynicism funny these days. But you know, there is something for everybody here, but I don't think everybody will like it as much as its makers are hoping they will. So I have to give this five. No, my God, sorry. I sound like a monster.
you evil son of a bitch.
Seven and a half.
What is wrong with you?
Seven and a half heffalumps stole it out of 10.
What about you, Shaq?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's a charming little movie. Like, you're right. It does take a while to get going. Also, I think Hayley Atwell is kind of wasted as just kind of like the concerned mom. They don't really give her that much to do.
No.
That's a shame. Yeah. But I like Ewan McGregor a lot. I thought all the voice actors were great, especially just Jim Cummings, just that beautiful golden voice. I did get suckered in by a lot of the nostalgia. Like, I was... If you saw me during the Tigger song, I was giddy like a motherfucker. It was crazy.
Those are the moments that hit home.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are the points that hit the points that hit the strongest. And so overall, I thought it was just nice, charming little movie. I don't think you need to rush out of your way to go see it. It's something you can just play at home with like your family and stuff like that. So yeah, I'll give it the same number. I'll give it 7.5 woozles, heffalumps and woozles out of 10.
Nice. I just kind of like that same way. I'm like, yeah, I guess I liked it. I definitely grew to like it more by the time it was over. But it's one of the, if you're one of those people who's like, I give a movie 20 minutes. I had somebody the other day told me, if I'm not totally in by 20 minutes, I'm done. I'm like, well, that's definitely not me.
No.
But there are a lot of people who are that way. Those people are never going to make it to the end of this movie.
Oh, no.
Because it's a bit rough getting started. But it does... genuinely find its feet. It genuinely gets sweet, if not a little ridiculous once again, the fact that Disney's trying to tell us the things they're trying to tell us. I love Hayley Atwell. I agree with you. It's disappointing she's not given more to do. I would pay full price to go see an Agent Carter movie. That's
yes.
how much I love Hayley Atwell. So hey. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to rewatch those seasons, which I love her.
Just came out of that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. And, of course, Ian McGregor always – I mean, he brings something to everything he's in, except mm-hmm. maybe the prequels, but that's not his fault.
That's absolutely not his fault.
There's a lot to like here, but I feel like if you don't already have some nostalgia for these characters, it's just not going to be for you at all. Mm-hmm. You're going to find it to be a treacly Disney film. If that nostalgia is in firmly and warmly in place – you'll get past that and be like, okay, I still enjoyed that it in the same way that teenagers love Ready Player One. I give this 7 out of 10 spurts of honey on the juice. I had to bring it back. The moment you said it, I was like, I know I'm coming back.
Oh, there you go.
You have tainted the sacred name.
Hey.